line relationship between chief enabled material and CNO. So there are two lines.
In other words, that.
And Paul Nitze, after thousands of hours of effort, changed it to a unilinear system where the whole system reported up through the CNO.
See, that's where I keep my instinctive feeling after listening to them all. I was talking, for instance, to Admiral Clark yesterday, and I've talked to the one who runs the sea systems, and I keep hunting to find how to get themselves really connected to each other. You see, nowadays, because the contract requirements are coming from the assistant secretaries, the military requirements coming out of the CNO, and I don't see how they all get together and keep each other informed.
It's a mess. And it used to be a mess before Paul Nitze changed it. It worked fine, in my judgment, when I was CNO, having the chief of naval material reporting to me.
And who was your VCNO?
It was, the VCNO was, I had four of them. For the first 6 months, it was Chick Clary. For the second couple of years, it was Ralph Cousin. For the third couple of years, it was Mickey Wiesner. And for the last year, it was Jimmy Holloway. And then the very last month, Worth Bagley.
All right, and at that time, the chief of naval materiel, that was still a four-star.
Right.
Who was it?
And it was, for most of my watch, it was Ike Kidd. Let's see, his predecessor was I think Pete Gallup.
Well, yeah, I think he was. But now, Ike Kidd was pretty senior in this, right?
He was four-star.
No, well, what I meant was your VCNO senior?
Well, by law, he was senior.
Because he was VCNO.
That's right.
All right.
That was never a problem.
See, when I asked Admiral Small this very point, he said, well, our date of rank was the same day. And he said, Chief of Naval Personnel and Materiel always went direct to CNO, and that didn't bother me, he said. But well, my own reaction at this point is, well, it would bother me if I were the...
Yeah, it didn't work that way with me. I kid always came in through the CNO, the VCNO.
That's because you said it that way too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I said to Admiral Clark that perhaps... Here's what Admiral Watkins thinks about this. He thinks... He's very happy about having done away with that material. It's one thing he keeps saying, he and John Layman saw eye to eye. Watkins wanted to do away with it for years because he thought it was an unnecessary layer. So now, then you put together 095, and 095 gives you a look across the different warfare areas, supposed to integrate. Whether it really does, with 090 having the money, is a question.
See, I think what Jim Watkins is overlooking is the fact that increasingly the evolution is for the services to become strictly training, procurement, and logistics. Increasingly, the operational power of the military is being applied through the chairman, and he's now deputy chairman, who has authority over the individual service chiefs and the senior chiefs. And the service chiefs increasingly are being pushed out of the operational arena. If at the same time they get pushed out of the materiel arena, they're going to become an anachronism. The real natural future for the service chief is to be in the line and flourishing on logistics, procurement, research and development, and so forth.
That's an excellent point. The other side of the same thing is he thinks that the Space and Warfare Command is integrating across the different surface, air, and so on, looking at the whole war environment. And that's what I asked Admiral Clark, and he says, well, it's still in its early stages, but I don't see how he's going to have the clout to do it under the present situation, you see? In other words, at both ends, I think you got a man without enough clout,
yeah,
as it stands, to do what I hear described. And if this, if it isn't all reporting to the CNO as such, I have difficulty.
Right.
You wonder about it a little,
yeah,
too.
I think it's a, you know, the other services don't do it our way. The other services, the service chief of staff runs the logistics and procurement R&D. And the Navy will go back to it, mark my word.
Well, I'm very pleased I brought that up. It's the one area, when Admiral Watson's going to read, he agreed to read the whole manuscript. I'm sure when he gets to this piece of it, he's going to think that here I am, and I'm not really very converted. Are there any little things that I ought to, that I could incorporate that would, you know, this is a heavy book.
Yeah.
I mean, any interesting little anecdotes that perhaps you haven't put in the book that might, you know,
dealing with any subject?
Yeah. You see, this is a book for the professional naval officer. I mean, that's the audience that I have in mind, showing them, you know, the problems that they overcame and so on. But it's pretty heavy. It's pretty serious.
Well, I believe in retrospect, in my book, I did not adequately deal with the extent to which our government had become a series of almost semi-autonomous dukedoms during the last 6 months of the Nixon Watergate era. And the extent to which, as a result of his almost total preoccupation with Watergate and survival, Kissinger and Haig usurped the powers of the president. You know, if you think that what Poindexter has done in deciding to protect the president by not talking to him, as...
Is that what he said?
Yeah, today. I think he's handled himself with great distinction in the way in which he testified. He'll get criticized a lot, but nevertheless, Haig Kissinger seized the presidency during that last 6 months, and in my judgment, it was a very, very frightening period. I believe we came as close to having a fascist system during those last 6 months as this country has ever gotten. Telephones were tapped. Threats were made about the use of the information that was picked up in those tapping. People were trailed. It was a very frightening period from the standpoint of one watching what was happening to a democracy. I'm not sure that's the kind of thing you want to get into in your book. But
I was thinking, that's interesting to me. I was thinking, if there was anything that had even a slightly humorous aspect to it, some little confrontation or some remark somebody got off that was really on the spot, you know, really said it, anything like that.
It wasn't a very humorous time. I think of anything, I'll call it in.
That'd be fun. Because you'd be surprised.
The book, I haven't read the book.
Yeah, I love
several years now. In the last month, when Worth Bagley was DCNO, and Congress was getting ready to hold hearings as to whether or not to admit women to the Naval Academy. Is that in there?
I don't think so.
The president knew that I was the one service chief that would think that was a good idea. So he instructed Schlesinger that the other chief could testify and that I was to send, instead of going myself, the most senior naval officer under me, who would state that women should not be admitted to the service academy. So it was very simple. return to work Bagley, my good friend who disagreed with me on that issue, and he went over, so testified. Congress, in its wisdom, bought my belief.
Yeah.
Or admitted.
And I think that it was time, as they say.